I'm always wary of hitters who can really hurt your batting average. And, you know, if I get someone like this, I feel like I have to get a 300 hitter, you know, maybe 290 in this day and age somewhere else. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus podcast. I'm your host, Mike Gianella, senior fantasy baseball writer at Baseball Prospectus. And as always, or as we've had recently behind the glass, is Jen Mock Ramos of the BP Stats team, as well as the Hardball Times. And with me, as always, is my co-host, editor or fantasy editor at Baseball Prospectus, Zach Steinhorn. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Looking very much forward to talking about the plethora of exciting fantasy catcher options.
Yeah, you know, so it's a bummer. I know this is a bad week to start. We've been joking about it at the site all week, but the upside is it's exciting. We're here. We're at the beginning of our fantasy coverage, and you know, just to promote that a little bit before we kick off the catcher podcast. This week we have 15 articles on catchers, and next week we'll be up to, I think it's 20. Zach, is that the
number? 19 or 20? It might be 19, but yeah.
Yeah, so we've got the full slate of coverage each week, building up to, you know, a very exciting year. I know we're switching up a little bit. I think I'll share our expert league news. So Zach and I managed the Labor NL team together, and great news for Baseball Prospectus. We are keeping three slots, but we're all switching up. I'm going to be on the NL side of the pool and keeping that team and trying to keep Howard Bender of Fantasy Alarm honest. Brett Sayer, who was in the mix, will be coming out with me to Arizona and handling the AL auction. And Zach, you'll be doing the online mixed draft, which is next month, right?
Yep, February 12th. It's going to be my earliest draft, so I can't waste any more time in my preparation.
Yeah, you better start now. Well, if you need any help from any of us, just let us know. I know that I've done that. Brett and I did that the first 3 years that BP was in that league, and I remember it's fun to prep, but also it's a little weird. And the weird thing about labor is you can't make any moves until like late March, so you kind of sit there and watch your team for weeks and weeks, and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is horrible.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I think many of the owners in that league are also in my mixed auction towers league, so it'll be interesting to see you know, how their teams compare in the two leagues, because they're a lot of the same people.
Yeah, that's true. I know that Fred Zinke is not. Fred Zinke is one of the dupes, right?
He's in my towers league. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's in that league, and
yeah, I think he's in that labor league as well. Yeah.
I'd have to look at the lineup. I think Scott Pianowski's in both leagues. So Pianowski, yeah, you.
Derek Van Riper is another one.
I run into that in, so something I try to do, and one thing I didn't like about doing Labor NL that I think hurt me in Tout, was that because I did both NLs, I felt like they knew it was coming for me in Tout NL. So yeah, that's a bit of a, that's something you want to watch. You want to watch that, you know, people don't just look at your auction or draft and go, hey, I know what he's doing. And in an auction, I think it's a little more difficult because people can outbid you, whereas in a draft, it's a little harder for somebody to try to, you know, work those angles.
And the mixed labor league, they don't have those restrictive roster rules. That's just AL and NL, right?
Okay. That is correct. The one restriction in labor mix is you can't speculate on minor leaguers via FAB. Actually, the other restriction is it's still a dollar FAB minimum.
Right.
But you can pretty much, you can reserve anybody. So, you know, if you've got like Yonder Alonso and he's not hitting, but you don't want to cut him, you can reserve him.
Sound like that thing where the only players you could reserve are the guys you draft in the reserve rounds, that rule.
That's correct. So, and with pitching, that'll really work to your advantage too, because it's six player reserve, and that's in a mixed league, you can't really go with like keeper else, because that's not any way to live.
Yep.
Okay, so let's dive into catchers. I know I said we'd talk about catchers, and we got kind of stuck on we got stuck instead on labor, and we didn't really get into tout. We'll talk plenty about that in the next month. And Zach, you'll be in the driver's seat when we do the Labor Mix podcast. You'll get to talk all about how that went for you. But for now, let's talk about catchers. So catcher week at BP, and we did what we've done and what I've done for the last 5 years, which is a 5-star rating system of the top 30 catchers. And Zach, tell us about the 5-star tier. Who's the best catcher this year in the 5-star tier for the, you know, the guy you want, the player who should be on your team?
Well, the funny thing is that this year there was no one in the 5-star tier. So generally, I guess you could look at the 5-star tier as a player who would cost $20+ in an auction, and you know, this year that player doesn't really exist. Probably, you know, drafting any catcher, you know, within the top say 35 to 40 picks this year, you know, would be a mistake. You know, just pass on that position altogether and go with someone else. But the 4-star tier, there is one member of that 4-star tier, and that is Gary Sanchez. Now, Sanchez last season, 18 homers, 53 RBIs, 51 runs scored in just 89 games. So the counting stats, you know, were strong, but 186 batting average. So that was obviously a tremendous disappointment. And he this is after he batted 299 in 2016 and 278 in 2017. So, but, you know, the one thing to mention with that batting average is his BIP was 197. So that suggests that, you know, the low average was a little fluky and it's going to get back up. But, you know, are you confident that Sanchez's stat line this season is going to look more like the 2017 version? And, you know, when you made these catch rankings, how did you even think twice about keeping him in that top spot?
No, not really. I thought briefly. So right now in ABP, he and JT Realmuto are very close, and they've kind of bounced back and forth, in fact, the last few days. But no, I Sanchez to me belongs there just because Realmuto is solid. And if they just duplicate what they did last year, then obviously Realmuto is number one. But there's more upside in Sanchez. I agree with your assessment. He'll, even if he only hits 240 and the average doesn't come back all the way, Sanchez should still be a 30 to 35 home run hitter, particularly in Yankee Stadium. That's a lot of what I'm looking at. I'm looking at somebody who I don't believe will hurt your average nearly that much. And you have to keep the position in mind, too. So if Sanchez hits 240, that's not great. Or, you know, let's say saving 230, that's not great. But given the position and the other batting averages we usually see there, that's still not going to hurt you that much. And you're talking about 30 home runs. So, yeah, he was the guy for me. I obviously wasn't going to put him in 5-star. We had him there last year. But 4-star feels like a good place. So question for you before we move to the next tier. Sanchez is going in about the 4th round in 15-team leagues. Are you comfortable with that, or is that a little too much for you, or do you think that's a bargain?
Well, his ADP right now in FBC is 56, and that's actually just one spot behind Realmuto. So I do prefer Sanchez over Realmuto, but I may put Realmuto in that same class as Sanchez in the 4-star tier. But you know, Sanchez, I'm not sold on drafting a catcher. I'm at that point in the draft. I think it's probably a better idea to address other positions because there are some attractive guys in the next tier, the 3-star tier that we're going to be talking about soon. Just to look at ADP, NFBC ADP, guys who are taken later than Realmuto, and that those players include George Springer, Lorenzo Cain, Marcell Ozuna, Matt Carpenter, and Gene Segura. They're all being taken after JT Realmuto. So, you know, it's a situation where would you rather have Realmuto or Sanchez, or would you rather go with one of those guys that I think they just offer a little more from a well-rounded fantasy perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the argument, if you're taking Sanchez or Realmuto in the 4th round, it's a scarcity argument. The challenge there, and we kind of saw this with Sanchez last year, if you take a catcher in the 4th round and he doesn't work out, you're putting yourself in a position where you're not only losing out on that player, you're losing a significant chunk of value. And it's very unlikely anyone from the free agent pool is going to come through to help you with that. So it's a double-edged sword. Sanchez works out in the fourth round and does what he did, or, you know, from a seasonal pace in 2017, that's a big win, and I get it. But I agree, there's some risk there. So let's move on. We mentioned Realmuto. Let's move on to the three-star tier. So there's seven catchers in this tier, and I said it in the article, and I want to kind of find out if you agree. It used to be, if you were in a one-catcher 12-team league, you could get a catcher. Like, you could get somebody decent. You know, you might not get Sanchez. You might not get Buster Posey in his prime. We'll talk about him in a minute. But you'd get somebody. You'd get some kind of production. Do you agree with my assessment in the tier article that if you don't get someone, either Sanchez or someone in this tier, that you're potentially going to be lacking even in a one-catcher league?
Yeah, you're going to be like, there's definitely a drop off after the Sanchez Realmuto. But, you know, personally, I think my strategy this season is going to be, like I said, to take someone from that next group, that, you know, Grandal, Ramos, Wilson Contreras neighborhood. So I do think there's a drop off after those first two. But then again, I think, like I said before, I'd rather use my early round pick or my auction resources to address other positions first and then swing back to catcher, you know, a few rounds later.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of these guys. So I think we covered Realmuto fairly well. If you want to add something on him, feel free.
One thing about Realmuto before we move on is, you know, he had a great year, but do remember that he faded pretty badly down the stretch. He batted only .232 with a .721 OPS in the second half after having a .901 OPS prior to the All-Star break. So, you know, it could simply be an issue of him wearing down. You know, catchers tend to wear down. But, you know, before you spend that, you know, top 50 or so pick on Realmuto, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, my thing about Realmuto, I like him. I just don't look for where he's going. It's kind of a head scratcher. It's like, you know, 21 home runs. Even if you don't look at the second half, 21 home runs, 74 runs and runs batted in, three steals, .277. That's good. You know, outside of the average, and really it isn't even a special average, how different is he from the rest of the players in this tier? Like to look at Buster Posey is, I think he's going to be polarizing a little bit. And there was some debate on him when we put together the rankings. Buster Posey, like if Buster Posey bounces back and let's say hits, you know, we know the power might not be there, but if he hits 300, if he gets to like 13 to 15 home runs, Realmuto is better, but when you factor in the average for Posey, like how much of a difference is there?
Yeah, there may not be. And, you know, the thing with Posey is that you're just gambling on the health. And, you know, it is very likely that the hip injury played a role in the huge, you know, the very low home run total. But, you know, there is risk with him. I can understand. I can understand someone, drafting Posey at a discount, you know, at this year as opposed to previous years where you really had to pay a full price for him. But I'd probably rather go with, you know, say a younger and just less risky option. If I'm gonna use that level of draft pick on a catcher.
Yeah, truthfully, I was a little surprised. It was Brett Sayre who was the one who had come out and mentioned including Posey in the four star. I had him lower initially in these rankings. I had him middle of the pack as opposed to right behind Realmuto, and that's kind of my feeling about Posey, which is for him to get back to a four star, which certainly isn't impossible. He's got to get close to 20 home runs. He's got to hit 300. And, you know, to your point, Zach, he has to stay on the field. All those things have to happen. Doesn't mean they can't. The ability is certainly there. Personally, I love Buster Posey. I'm a fan of his as a player. He's not going to be old at 32. But I just don't see a profile there that scream, yes, you know, he has to be ranked right behind, you know, Gary Sanchez and right after Realmuto.
Yeah, I just think it's far more likely that he's going to be either, you know, the same or maybe slightly better than last year, then all of a sudden just, you know, returning to vintage Buster Posey. So I like that, you know, Grandal, Ramos, Contreras trio. I'm not sure if I'm going to wind up with any of those three. Maybe I'll go a little bit lower than that, but I definitely prefer one of those three to Posey.
So you see this because you edit my pieces. I agree with you on Grandal. I'm a big fan. Perez is similar, you know, average is a little bit lower. And that's really the difference between Grandal, Perez, and Realmuto. You're sacrificing, you know, average for power when you take those players. You know, Contreras is the player I think we might have a little disagreement on. He was my catcher to avoid. You know, not because you should avoid him as in not take him at all, but because compared to everyone else in this tier, I just don't see the performance, even if there's some bounce back from last year. It's a ground ball profile. That's what he does. You know, even when he hits it hard, he hits it into the ground. I feel like 2017 was a fluke for the power. I can see Contreras getting back to 15 home runs, but if you're looking at 15 home runs and a 260 average, he doesn't even belong in this tier. He belongs in the next tier.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Contreras that's a little appealing is that he's still just 26. I know, you know, it's very possible that 2017 will turn out to be a career year. But then again, you know, his home run to fly ball ratio went from 26% all the way down to 9% last season. So I don't know if that's, you know, that's telling that maybe it will be somewhere in the middle of those two numbers and he could get back to maybe, you know, high teens, 20 homers. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not, you know, I just think that, you know, comparing him to, say, like a Posey, you know, I'd sooner go with Contreras.
Yeah, I probably agree that they're closer. And, you know, again, it goes back to those initial rankings. Is there anyone else here that you want to talk about? I mean, I kind of alluded to this with Yadi or Molina. So I'm going to 2 years ago, Molina was my catcher to avoid. I panned him. I went on and on. And, of course, I think that's the year he, you know, hit 18 home runs and bounced back. Last year, he had another big power year. The average is down. He's traded, batting average for power. I am not going to pan Molina until like he retires or he completely falls off the map. I've just given up trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I guess I'm in the same boat with that. But then again, I'm probably never gonna own him again because, you know, every year I'm just going to avoid him every year until basically he retires. So
I got him in the 19th round of TGFBI, which was a one catcher league, and that was just him falling into my lap. It has to be that kind of situation where, you know, everybody's just out on him for some reason or the people. You've probably seen this more in auctions than drafts, but you'll have an auction where there's a big clump of people who have to have a catcher and there's enough people who are, you know what, I'll just pay for the second tier players. That's kind of when I'll get a Molina. He's better than the players in the next tier, but the age kind of puts me in a position I'm not going to pay the full price. I agree.
Who do you, so like of the, say the three catchers of Ramos, Contreras, and Molina, like which one of those three do you think are going to deliver the most profit just in terms of for 2019?
Probably Ramos because the price is going to be somewhat suppressed because of the health or the perceived health. And you know, it's funny. I think Rob Silver, our new colleague at Baseball Prospectus, he was talking. I forget what the number was. You know, he went through this on Twitter, and I think he said Ramos is eighth or seventh. I think it's eighth in plate appearances going back like 3 years or 4 years. It's that whole durability thing with catchers. Yes, Ramos isn't super durable, but you've got Perez, you've got Contreras, you've got Grandal, maybe Realmuto. It's just not a durable position. So if Ramos gets to those 450 plate appearances, don't forget that last year he sat in part because he was traded to the Phillies. He split time with Jorge Alfaro. If he gets 450 plate appearances, I think he's good for 20 home runs and a 280 average, and that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I've always liked Ramos, but then again, you know, this year I think his price is probably higher than it's been in a while. So, you know, I'm going to try to get him in a few leagues, but I also don't, you know, you're not going to be able to get him at any sort of discount. You know, combined.
I mean, honestly, of you know, the catchers right now are in this big clump in ADP outside of Realmuto. So from Posey down to Molina, I want Grandal. Grandal is the catcher I want. I like the move to Milwaukee. Not the Dodgers. Dodgers stadium is good for homers too, but it helps Grandal even somewhat more if that's possible. I know we're always thinking Grandal, or I am, and you know Brett is. We should pour one out for Brett and his love of Grandal. We're always thinking he's going to hit 30 home runs and you know hit 260. He probably won't hit 260, especially because he's extremely streaky. But I could see him getting closer to 30 in that park. And yeah, Grandal is the catcher I want in this group.
And even note also that in addition to the move to Milwaukee, which is, you know, definitely hurt, increases the value, He's a career 341 OBP hitter. So in an OBP leagues, he carries even more value because yeah. You know, the batting average is something that's always been sort of his weakness. He had a few years where had a decent batting average, but then there were some years where he hit well under 250. So that's the concern with him. But in an OBP league, he's tremendously valuable.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, that's something that we, you know, kind of touch upon more and more just because more and more people play in OBP. And, you know, to get on our soapbox, Zach and I, if you have an opportunity to play an OBP over batting average, you should. It's better. It's really silly to me, to put it nicely, not to count walks. But yeah, you know, you look at the catchers with a high walk rate, you know, just going by 200 more plate appearances, I know it's a low bar. I'll go to 300. You know, Russell Martin, who, you know, we didn't even have him in this article. He was first, highest walk rate. Then was Grandal. Then was Chris Iannetta. Then, and we'll talk about him a little bit, is Francisco Cervelli. So, yeah, if you're in an OBP league and you can get that production from Grandal, you know, and you're not talking about a Chris Iannetta as someone who has a good walk rate and helps his OBP, but otherwise it's kind of meh. You definitely should go do that in that kind of format.
Yeah, I drafted Grandal out for $5 in tout this past season. I have a feeling it's going to be a little more expensive this time around.
Yeah, well, and some of that last year it was an even more uncertain situation right. For Grandal because it looked like Austin Barnes was going to start. And we all believe that. And I think one of my 15-team mix, I got Grandal in the 23rd round of the draft, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, well, I get that, you know, he's going to lose some time to Barnes, but at this slot, even in a two catcher league, that's a no brainer.
Yeah. So let's you want to move on to the two stars?
Yeah, I do, just because there's a big chunk here. We're not going to, you know, just to let our new listeners know, we're not going to talk about every single player in every tier. We could go on for 2 hours, and I can already hear Jen behind the glass being like, please don't go on for 2 hours, you know, my ears. So we'll move on. And so the two star tier, I will read off all the names. There's 10 catchers in this tier. There's Jorge Alfaro, Mike Zunino, Wellington Castillo, who's your guy, Zach, Francisco Mejia, Danny Jansen, Francisco Cervelli, Robinson Chirinos, Williams Astudio, Yan Gomes, and Kurt Suzuki. So it's a big list, and this is probably where in a two catcher league and in a deeper mixed, I'd say you want one of these catchers to be your second catcher if you're trying to fill out both positions with somebody capable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, I picked Wellington Castillo as my catcher to target in Monday's roundtable piece. And, you know, he's a guy who I think, you know, if I get him as my second catcher, I'd be thrilled. But he's also, you know, I wouldn't be really upset if I just waited and waited on catcher in a deep mixed league and he's my first catcher. I kind of view him as sort of like the back end of the top 12, but in reality, he's ranked as, say, number 15, number 16. So I think there is definitely a profit to be had with Castillo. You know, last year was obviously, you know, a lost season with the suspension, and then he spent time on the DL. But, you know, I think, you know, he's a guy who he has Narvaez is in Seattle. You know, he has the job pretty much to himself. And, you know, I think there's some, you know, definitely a lot of value to be had in taking, say, a late round flyer on him.
Yeah, you look at the last 3 years before last year, before the suspension, 19 homers, actually working backwards, 20 homers, 14 homers, 19 homers. Not difficult to envision a 15 homer, 260 batting average with about 400 plate appearances. If he does that in this tier, you know, unless Francisco Mejia breaks out and, you know, fulfills that potential, they trade Austin Hedges in San Diego, Castillo is the player who will be the best earner in that tier unless Mejia really breaks out, I would think.
Yeah, it's funny. When I wrote the blurb for the targets on Monday, he was actually the 17th catcher in NFBC ADP, and now he moved up to 15. So maybe people are reading my work. I don't know.
But, that often does happen. I found I'll write something, and I'll notice a week or two later there's creep. You know, it's not just us usually, though. The NFBC drafts are kind of poisoned by the early drafts or that they have.
Yeah, the draft champions.
You'll see somebody way too low, and you'll be like, yeah, by the time March rolls around, that's going to correct somewhat.
Yeah, so Castillo now, just to note, is that he's now just slightly ahead of Tucker Barnhart and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. So there's still value to be had, but it's getting less and less.
It's getting less. I think those two are somewhat overrated for different reasons, and maybe we'll dive into that in the one star tier. But let's continue with the two star for now. So, like I said, we're not going to touch upon all these players. So, Zach, let's each talk about, I'd say, two or three catchers besides Castillo in this tier. And since you talked about Castillo a little bit, I'm going to start with somebody who we had last year in labor. I had him elsewhere, Francisco Cervelli. So Cervelli's a catcher I really like, a solid. You know, he's had some injuries on and off over the years. He's certainly not young by catching standards. He'll be 33 on opening day. But this is a player who's really improved with the bat almost every year. Kind of showed a little bit with that bat with the Yankees, but was buried on the bench. And I just look at someone as Cervelli, and this is a theme with this tier. He's solid if you kind of know that what he did last year is about the upside of what to expect. I wouldn't be surprised if Cervelli hit 8 to 10 home runs as opposed to the 12 he hit last year. I don't see the average really increasing over that 259. You know, to your point, on base, 378 on base, he'll come close to that. If you're playing that format, that's a big plus. But probably one of the safer catchers in this tier, in that, you know, he has the job. Diaz will spell him a little bit. But if Cervelli's healthy, probably he and Castillo have the safest path here to 450 plate appearances.
Yeah, if I could get Cervelli, say, as my second catcher in any sort of mixed league, I'd be thrilled. So I don't know if I trust him as my, you know, number one, but as a number two, I think he's really solid, especially in OBP leagues. But, you know, he hit 8 home runs in the first 2 months of last season and then went on to just hit 4 the rest of the way. So, you know, the power, the 12 home runs, as you mentioned, might be a little bit fluky, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me at all to see him maybe get to, you know, 9 or 10. To go along with the decent batting average. So yeah, I mean, Cervelli, he's the guy that I'd be happy to have if I wanted to sort of punt the catcher position and draft him as my number one, or more preferably to have him as my number two.
So who's your first player here that you, besides, you know, who we've talked about, who you want to dive into?
Well, I guess we got to mention Francisco Mejia, because he's had a lot of, I guess he kind of had more hype maybe a month or so ago, and now he's kind of just falling more into this clump. But, you know, the upside is obviously high, but, you know, this is also a player who's played in just 32 career major league games. So, you know, I think it's dangerous to, you know, expect him. I don't know how you feel about Mejia, but I think it's sort of dangerous to expect him to all of a sudden perform at like a top 12 level, you know, right out of the gate.
Yeah, I love the bat and the ceiling. The thing with there's a couple things with Mejia that get me nervous, and maybe they go hand in hand. You know, first, his biggest numbers were at high A and lower. So we really haven't seen like a significant output from Mejia double A or higher. Doesn't mean the potential's not there. Doesn't mean he can't be like a 20 home run hitter with a 300 batting average. We just haven't seen it. You know, the second piece of that is that he is kind of stuck in a situation where Austin Hedges is established. Doesn't mean that Mejia can't push Hedges aside. We're not talking about a great catcher in his prime, but it could easily be a situation where the Padres just kind of split it down the middle. If Mejia does okay with the bat, they're like, well, whatever, you know, he's just up here for experience. It could be a couple of years before Francisco Mejia is the catcher we expect. So I like him here as a flyer. I'm fine with taking him, you know, as opposed to taking, you know, a Tucker Barnhart, because Barnhart's definitely going to play, but you do have to temper your expectations.
Now back to my old friend, Wellington Castillo. You know, he's being drafted around 30 picks after Mejia. So, you know, to me, in a redraft league, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I'd rather have Castillo. So, you know, it just goes to show, I don't think Mejia is being overrated as much as he was maybe a month ago, but I think he's still kind of a dangerous investment at this point.
I'd agree in a redraft. Obviously in a keeper, it's a different story. In a redraft, the one place that might be different is in a 12 team or even a 10 team, where you're like, you know what, I'm just going to make the spec play. You know, if he gets off to a fast start on opening day, great. If not, I'm just going to cut him. But yeah, that all feels like a stretch to me. So the next catcher I think I'm going to go with here, let's do three each. So this is my second. Robinson Chirinos. So Robinson Chirinos signed with the Astros. And, you know, when he did sign there, I think everyone was a little surprised. And he was also non-tendered by the Rangers, which was kind of a surprise. Now, Chirinos is older. You know, he'll be 35 in June. And we know catchers kind of wear down. But the other side of that is because he was never a full-timer, not even in the minors, not as much mileage on his knees and overall as you would expect. So here's my thing about Chirinos. I know that there were a couple people who wanted to be more aggressive with him, bump him up more, and I did bump him up a little bit. I think I actually had him in the one star initially. Something intriguing about this is that Max Stassi, the other catcher for the Astros, had the second highest amount or second best framing runs rate of, and everyone in BP, Grandal was first. Chirinos was fourth from the bottom. Now, you know, we know the deal with this. You know, our metrics and the metrics the Astros have might be completely different. I don't think Max Stassi is going to win the job, but I do think it's going to be more of a job split than some are thinking. And Chirinos, who had 426 plate appearances last year, I could see him more in the 300 to 350 range. Doesn't mean he's not valuable. He's established that he's a power bat. But I think we're looking more at like 13 to 15 home runs with a bad batting average, which to me makes a difference. Like if I'm going to carry this kind of batting average with my catcher, I want him to get closer to 20.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think you have him ranked, you know, pretty reasonably here in this two-star tier. I, like you said, I did like Chirinos a little bit more about a month ago until, you know, we heard about this, the Max Stassi situation, but yeah, you know, you're relying on him to, you know, provide counting stats. And if his at bats aren't, you know, what you expect him to be, he's not going to do that, like you said, and the batting average is not going to be good. So I view Chirinos, I guess, similarly to, you know, Cervelli, just different types of players, though, but as in just overall rankings, like if I draft him as my number two catcher, I'd be happy. And if I draft him as my number one, I'd be like so-so about it.
Yeah, my only thing about Chirinos and players like that, you know, and Mike Zunino's who's in this tier is like that as well. I'm always wary of hitters who can really hurt your batting average. And, you know, if I get someone like this, I feel like I have to get a 300 hitter, you know, maybe 290 in this day and age somewhere else.
Yeah. So I guess we can't finish this discussion without, I guess, talking about Williams Astudillo, right? Everyone's favorite.
We have to, because there was so much discussion and debate around him, and I had him really low, and I might have even had him out of this tier in the first place or at the bottom of it. And I'm just really torn, because there's no doubt about the talent, but I'm kind of skeptical as far as the playing time and how that's all going to shake out.
Yeah, he has a really obscenely high contact rate, but he just swings at everything. So I guess it's kind of like in the Vladimir Guerrero mold of catcher version.
Well, that's it too. Which is I feel that we're going to see more pitchers challenge him in the second half, and that doesn't mean that, you know, he can't be a productive player. I'm just not sure if there's not going to be a rough patch at some point where the batting average is low, the power isn't really there, and the power's good. It just isn't on a level where, and it wasn't on a level of the minors where I'm like, oh my gosh, like he's definitely going to, you know, be a stud in that department.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that sort of, like the Francisco Mejia example, is someone who, you know, I think the hype train is so high right now that there's just going to be no room for profit. And at that, you know, at that level, you know, Astudillo is, you know, it's fine as an investment and, you know, as a number two catcher, maybe in a mixed league, but his people are just so going gung ho over him that I don't think I'm going to be participating on the bidding war.
So
for his services.
Over under on what's your over under for home runs for him?
Let's say like 12, I'd say.
Yeah, I was thinking 13. That's yeah. Probably fair. So of the two Nationals catchers we have here, who gets the most? This is kind of my lightning round for you, Zach. Who gets the most plate appearances?
I think it's Yan Gomes, but it's going to be very close. And, you know, your Kurt Suzuki, you know, he's been very underrated over the last few years. And during his time with the Braves, he wasn't considered. He was also in that similar timeshare role, and he still, you know, put up very solid counting stats numbers totally worthy of a mixed league roster spot. So I think people might be sleeping a little bit on Suzuki, but I do think that Gomes is going to probably edge him slightly in the at-bat department.
Yeah, I think I mentioned in the piece, you know, Suzuki's OPS over the last 2 years is the highest among catchers with at least 550 plate appearances. He's been really great as a hitter, and it's kind of, I think, unless you play in deep leagues like we do, it's kind of gone unnoticed.
Yeah, I would be, he kind of belongs in that same tier of those, you know, those attractive second catchers. And I think he could be had for a little bit cheaper just because of the playing time situation with the Gomes. People are sort of scared off by that whole situation. Yeah. So yeah, Suzuki as a second catcher is perfectly fine with me.
I think the other catcher I want to mention briefly, just because I really like him as a player, but I don't see it translating to fantasy, is Jorge Alfaro. I don't know how much you got to watch him. You know, he's here in Philadelphia. He's very athletic. It's fun to watch him run to first because you see this big hulking dude and you're like, well, there's no way he's going to, like, you know, have any speed. And then he busts it down the line and you're like, oh my gosh, like, this guy can, you know, he's not Billy Hamilton, but for a big guy, he can run. You know, the problem is the strikeout rate is awful, and, you know, he doesn't walk either. So as much as I want to believe in Alfaro as a player, I think he'll be fine as a catcher. It's a tough profile in fantasy because if the strikeouts go up at all, you could be looking at like a 220, 230 batting average, and there's not enough there otherwise to really, you know, make you want to live with that.
Yeah, he's a real wild card this year. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, how much, if any, he has improved since last season. But, you know, there is potential, but the question is just how high that potential is. So, you know, he's someone who I'm not going to necessarily be targeting, and I'm not sure what his market price is going to turn out to be, but you know, the Phillies are going to feel a lot better about trading Cole Hamels if he turns out to be something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. You know, Nick Williams has been okay. You know, Jared Eichhoff's been hurt, and he kind of had those, like, that one half a season that was decent. The Phillies so far haven't really reaped much from that trade. Yeah, Alfaro right now is 12th overall among catchers, and
a little high. Yeah,
It's a little high, although I think, again, you know, some of that is the potential's there. And, you know, compared to some of these names that we've looked at, there's like Alfaro. I have more faith in Alfaro than Astudillo, just because I'm like, well, Alfaro has been in the majors for a longer stretch. We're not looking at a small sample. Alfaro, if he hit 18 to 20 home runs, I wouldn't be shocked. Was if Astudillo did, I'd be shocked. I'd be like, wow, I can't believe he did that. I know some feel differently, but I tend to go with the somewhat more established player than the out-and-out rookie.
Yeah. So do you want to move on to the one-star tier?
I do. So just to let you know, Zach, since it's your first year here, what we usually do is each of us pick a player who, you know, we think is the pick here. So we'll alternate week to week. I think I'll let you go first. So, and you can also go off the board. You can do a zero star and you can pick somebody who you feel is the player. So something I try to avoid doing, since I write these articles, I try to avoid doubling up and going with the player that I picked as the value pick, because it's just repetitive. So who's your pick here? Or are you going off the board? Is there somebody in this tier that you think, yes, you know, if I'm in a deep two catcher league, this is my second catcher, or this is someone I'm going to have my eye on?
So the guy I'm going to talk about, it's funny that I talked about Wellington Castillo earlier, because the guy I want to talk about is Omar Narvaez, who, you know, he was really impressive as Castillo's replacement last year. Finished the season 275 batting average, 9 homers, 30 RBIs and 30 runs and only 280 at bats. So, you know, by far the most productive big league season of his career. And, you know, he's now going to be, the starting catcher. I'm in Seattle with little job competition. So, but he's being selected right now as the 26th catcher in NFBC drafts. So owners, you can get him in a deep mixed league. You get him towards the back end of that number two catcher range. And, you know, at that price, he's someone that I'm very interested in at that stage, and maybe even in an auction. You buy him for even an AL only, you could probably get him for what, maybe $5 or $6. So that's very appealing to me.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And, you know, the funny thing about Narvaez is his framing numbers and defense are awful. But it as I pointed out, I think in one of my pieces, it'll probably be in the AL piece tomorrow. If he plays, it doesn't matter to us. So if Narvaez hits 260 or 270 and, you know, can hit 12 to 14 home runs, which is certainly possible, there's some sneaky potential here, and I agree. It feels to me like a lot of people are just completely overlooking Omar Narvaez, you know, in a two catcher league. You know, I don't want to like stretch this and, you know, go overboard. So you picked the player I probably would have talked about, and that's kind of how bad and awful this all is. So I am going to actually go off the board, and I am going to talk about Tyler Flowers. So I included Brian McCann as my one star for the Braves, and conventional wisdom is that he'll get most of the plate appearances. But Brian McCann is also not young. I mean, he's kind of toward the end of his career. This looks like the happy homecoming. He'll be 35 next month. And while McCann could certainly be decent, it's not like 2017 is light years away. He also could potentially break down, not play so much, be more of a split. So if this is more of a split, and if Tyler Flowers can do what he did last year and play about 80 games, Flowers can be okay. The batting average last year stunk. You know, I know that because we also had him in tout, but he's another on-base player. Last 3 years, 341, 378, 357. Range of 8 to 12 home runs. And before last year, the batting average was there. It was between 270 and 280. And I know that was fueled somewhat by a high BABIP, but you know, when a player does that 2 years in a row, it makes me think it's more likely. I don't oversell this. We're talking about a one-star catcher. But 10 home runs and a 250 average, I feel is realistic, or something Flowers could do if he gets, you know, those 80 games. And in this tier, that's pretty solid. You'll be able to get Tyler Flowers, I would say, even in an L only for $2 or $3 at the most. And he should deliver on that at least.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And then this year, you know, last year he shared time with Kurt Suzuki, who was a far more reliable player than Brian McCann is now from at least a health standpoint. So his catcher pairing this year is not going to be as threatening to his playing time. So yeah, I mean, the batting average is not going to be good, but from a counting stat standpoint, you know, he's another guy in that, like we mentioned, that back end of the number two catcher pool in mixed leagues, that he's perfectly acceptable, you know, considering that he's just going to be, you know, a buck or two, $2 or $3 maybe, and even in NL only leagues.
Yeah, and then there's so many, you know, I didn't want to do an avoid segment here, because honestly, most of these catchers are catchers I'm going to hold my nose with and don't really want. It's just so bad. You really want to be careful not to get the double whammy. Someone who hits like 5 to 7 home runs and hurts your batting average, like kind of Christian Vasquez last year. That's what you want to avoid. You want to avoid the catcher who is so bad that even with the 4 steals, you really took a hit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess someone who's a little bit interesting that, you know, people are going to laugh about is Chris Iannetta, just because he's you know, in Colorado, he still has some power. But then again, I'm also looking at it from an OBP lens. So in an OBP league, you know, I think he's even an acceptable number two mixed league catcher. But you know, in a batting average league, he gets dropped down to sort of that NL only.
I mean, you know, double digit homers 3 of the last 4 years. The year of the Diamondbacks in 2017 was the big year, and that's what got people excited. Yeah, it's an OBP. Batting average difference, without a doubt. You might get a 250 batting average out of Iannetta. I think the disappointing part is everyone looked at Coors and thought, well, you know, he'll hit 250, he'll hit 260, and you're talking about a 230 career hitter who spent a big chunk of his career early on in Coors and didn't hit for average. You know, he had a year in Coors in 2010. It was a partial year, but he hit 197. That's really difficult to do in that park, which is so spacious. You know, that just, you know, and the weird thing about that year is he struck out 22% of the time. So it's not like it was all fueled by strikeouts. It was a bad BABIP year, but it just makes me think that he was making some poor contact too. So yeah, I like Iannetta as kind of that second catcher in an OBP format. I agree, but you know, otherwise, there's a reason Coors or no that he's down here.
Now, what about Austin Barnes? Because you talked about Grandal earlier. Do you think that it seems like Barnes will get a chance to start the season as the regular catcher? Do you? He was very good. He was pretty good in 2017 before, you know, getting off to a pretty bad start in 18. So do you think that he's, you know, is he someone who you'll be interested in, say, in that same range, than, you know, cheap number two catchers slash NL only type guys?
I'm interested in his current price, and he's a post type player, which I like. Like I never really he's 28th overall right now among catchers, and I never understand like why, you know, people like someone like this, and then all of a sudden they don't at all, and it's like, well, not much has changed. Like, he had a bad half a season. If you believed in the player initially, that there's still some life in this. And yeah, I could see Barnes hitting 250, you know, again, like, you know, 10 to 12 home runs. The thing that's intriguing about Barnes is he can run a little bit, and if you can get 7 or 8 steals out of your catcher along with some decent numbers otherwise, that's intriguing to me.
Yeah, he's someone I'd be thinking about in a deep league, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's there with Narvaez, where, you know, and I like Narvaez better, but that's, these are the kind of players I'm looking at in this tier, players who should, you know, should get some playing time and should get a decent opportunity, and they're going to be worth having. So I think that's it, unless you had anything else that you wanted to add on the exciting catchers in the one-star tier.
I guess the only other guy that jumps out, I guess, is Austin Hedges. So do you think that, you know, who knows what the Padres are going to do with him, with the Mejia and Hedges? And is he someone who, say, you would draft as your second catcher in a mixed league, or is he an NL-only guy? Or what are we going to do with Austin Hedges?
He's probably more of an only player just because of that. I have no faith in the batting average. You know, 231 last year, but a career 210. I know some of that is fueled by some really bad numbers in 2015, but Hedges strikes me as a player where you can't trust the average at all. And it's that double-edged sword I talked about. If he plays enough, he could hit 20 home runs. He could also hit 200 and negate a lot of that. And kind of like Gary Sanchez last year. Now, you know, Gary Sanchez was good enough to still be an earner in two catcher leagues, but that's not really what you're shooting for. And Hedges is not Gary Sanchez. That's a best case scenario. So yeah, and then there's Mejia, who we talked about. So yeah, NL only for me, and only like a couple bucks. I don't really want to push on Hedges and wind up holding the bag.
Yeah, I drafted Hedges and Tout in 2017 for, I think it was like $2 at that time. And there was actually a lot of optimism around him heading into that season. Oh, he could be, you know, very solid, like 20 homer guy and not kill you in batting average. But as it turned out, he was a batting average killer. And even actually Tout's an on-base percentage league. He's even worse than on-base percentage leagues than he is in average league. So I think his on-base percentage that year was like 250. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, it was 262, which is pretty
So that wasn't fun just having him in my lineup for most of the season as my second catcher. He gave me, I think, maybe something like 12 to 15 homers, but that was absolutely it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'll take a short break and then do our outro. So we'll be back in a minute.
Thank you.
Well, that'll wrap it up for Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Perspectives podcast. This is episode 180. As I said before, don't forget to capture all of our coverage at Baseball Perspectives. Next week is First Base Week. We'll be having the same coverage with even more articles, and we'll be talking about first basemen, which should be more exciting than talking about catchers. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, all those wonderful places. Once again, I'm Mike Gianella. Behind the glass, we have Jim Mock Ramos and my co-host, Zach Steinhorn. See you guys next week.
Thanks for listening.